Ant and Leo's excellent CES adventures are brought to you by Twit, home of the LastPass Studios. Securing every access point in your company doesn't have to be a challenge. LastPass unifies access and authentication to make securing your employees simple and secure. Check out LastPass.com/Twit to learn more.
This is Twit.
All right, day two, CES 2020. I had to come on over here to check out my folks at Canon, because we've all seen the big news from the 1DX Mark III. All of its goodness. And my man here is going to tell us just a little bit about it and let us know all of the nerdy techie specs, because you know our Twitter audience, we love those tech specs. Yeah,
there's a lot of specs. I don't think we have enough time to go through all the specs that we packed into this camera, because there's a lot. Yeah.
Well, first and foremost, what is the price point? Because that's what everybody wants to know right off the bat.
Price point is $64.99.
So this is aimed squarely at your pro photographer.
This is a pro product. This is going after those agency photographers, those sports action photographers, those guys that are, taking out and putting it in a market that's going to beat the snot out of it, really. This is going to live through just about anything.
Right. So tell me a little bit more about it.
So what we have, it's the same weight and feel, same size and shape and everything we're used to 1DX. Yep. 90 grams lighter, so it is a little
just
lighter.
Just a little bit lighter.
It is using the same exact battery as the previous version, but we're getting almost 3,000 shots per battery now.
Nice.
The biggest thing about this, though, is the autofocus system. We have really redone the autofocus system from the ground up.
Okay.
It's using a new area sensor array for autofocus. What that means is the AF sensor itself, what sees the subject to focus, is 28 times higher resolution at the center than what it has been in the past.
Now, all the focal points is across the sensor, is it?
So you've got 191 AF points that you're looking at. The same area of the 1DX Mark II, but you've got 191 of those points. 155 are cross types. I mean, they're really sensitive for low light.
Right.
Function.
Good.
To select those points, I'm going to flip this camera around for you.
Okay.
There's a new touch-sensitive AF on button, so I'm just going to ride my finger across here, and you can now very quickly move finger and choose those AF points. Previously, we had the multifunction. We can still use that the joystick, as most people call it. But it's much faster to just choose that across.
Very nice.
Now, if you're in live view, we're taking it into video mode.
It's like
you've got a 90 by 100% of the sensor area for autofocus now. So nearly 100% coverage of the sensor itself for autofocus, because we're using dual pixel CMOS AF.
Nice. So very good. All right. So now, again, this is how much? About $64.99. This is the new hotness 1DX Mark III here from Canon. So now let's go ahead and check out some more awesome goodness that you got. I believe something along the lines of live streaming. Okay, so now we're in this amazing gaming cave. Woo! What's Canon known about gaming now? What is this?
Who would have ever thought we would be in gaming, right?
Seriously. So what we have in here?
What we have. Our customers asked us for a lower-end product line with a clean HDMI signal out.
Okay.
So they want us to set their M200 or something along that line to do their streaming so that they could actually live stream the game.
Right.
But they want to use the camera better than a typical webcam, so we gave them the M200 with the clean HDMI out.
So M200, clean HDMI out. You're getting a larger sensor. I guess you get an APS-C sensor on this one, right?
24 million pixels. M-series lenses, so you can control your depth of field. You can control the exposure, the ISO.
Nice glass.
You've got all of that capabilities. You can even adapt an EF lens on there if you want something like a 1.2 aperture.
Right.
You've got those capabilities with an M-series.
Outstanding.
And at $499, it's a really easy camera to not only mount for your streaming, but maybe you pick that up and now you go do your blog.
Cool.
Maybe you go outside and do a family shoot, whatever you might be doing. It's a very versatile camera. And now we're able to bring it into their studio and do a live stream with that.
So we can shoot 4K, 24p?
We are actually outputting 4K 30 right now.
30?
Onto the display.
Beautiful. So we can take this off of our gaming rig if we feel like it and go out and continue to vlog, all at a nice pricing point of $499
with the lens.
So
here we are at the Central Hall. This is the TV area. Scott Wilkinson is going to give us a tour of all the audio and video stuff. Hey, Scott.
Mostly video. This is the TV area, as you say, and there's a lot of cool TV news.
And I have to say, the last time I was here was all about 4K. This year, it's all about
8K.
8K. We're at the LG booth. Of course, you know, I love my LG OLED.
I have the
E-series. And I have one from 2016. I think it's really old.
But still good.
Still looks great.
Yeah.
Let's go over here. I want to look at the OLED 8K.
8K.
100 million live lights, it says. I don't even know what that means. That the pixels. When you're shooting at 1080p, you're watching 720p.
You're not seeing 8K.
But it really does look great.
Oh, yeah.
It's not, and it's the HDR, but it's also the high the number of pixels, right?
Yes. I mean, if we're this close, the number of pixels means something. But you're not going to watch TV this close, right? So the real advantage of 8K is the smoothness, the naturalness. You can't see the individual pixels or even as much detail as it can show you, but if it upconverts lower resolution, 4K, 1080p, that's going to look a whole lot better. Native 8K content, we're not going to have much of for a long time.
That's what always gets me about these demos is they shoot special content.
Special, yes.
And they always, you know, they got a tiger and you can see the fur.
Yes, exactly.
The eyes and the zebra jump out at.
Exactly.
But that's not the kind of thing you watch at home.
No,
Here's a ball game. I mean, that's the kind of thing you might watch at home.
Sure. And now YouTube is offering some 8K content.
Yeah, but it's streamed over YouTube.
Correct. At a very high compression ratio. Correct.
So are we at the same stage with 8K that we were in the first couple of years of 4K? Is it kind of...
I don't think so, because I don't think we're going to get native 8K as quickly as we got native 4K content.
It's a lot of data.
It's an awful lot of data. As you see up here, 100 million live lights. Now, what that really means is 100 million sub-pixels, red, green, blue, and white in this case. The actual number of full-color pixels is 33 million.
But still, it's a lot of bandwidth.
A lot of bandwidth.
In fact, they're upgrading the HDMI spec to accommodate it.
Correct.
One,
yep.
Broadcasters aren't doing it. I mean, they got to 4K. I doubt they're going to...
Barely.
Yeah.
Barely.
Trade in all that new stuff for an 8K.
Right.
Content creators. And if most content now is streamed...
Right.
There's a Blu-ray spec. Is there a coming Ultra UHD spec?
Well, there is an Ultra UHD Blu-ray at 4K, but there's no. I don't think there's ever going to be an 8K disc.
So
it's all going to be on streaming.
We are at a weird inflection point.
It isn't quite like 4K. Yeah.
Now, not to mention the difficulty editing it. I mean, Apple has
a
$25,000 computer just to edit 8K video.
Right.
It is a complicated. Right. It is a lot of data.
Right.
But again, I mean, when we first started shooting 1080p, which we're shooting now, the workflow 15 years ago was undoable. It took Alex Lindsay a week to render a 5-minute video. So things move along.
Things do move along. And in terms of compression, we're going to go over to the ATSC booth where they're showing ATSC 3.0,
the new broadcast standard,
and which includes some streaming. They're streaming in 4K at 4 megabits per second, what used to take in the older compression scheme, 12 megabits.
Is that H.265?
Correct.
Let's go look at that.
All right.
So I keep hearing about micro LED. What we just saw was
OLED.
There's NanoCell, which is traditional LCD.
Traditional LCD TV with a special quantum dot sort of layer that helps a variety of things.
And they also have 8K for that.
They do.
This is a prototype. This is not something LG is selling yet. This
correct.
This is not micro LED. This is mini
LED.
What's mini LED?
Okay, first of all, micro LED is tiny little LEDs.
They're direct view.
They're direct view. They emit light. You see that light directly, and that's it. They're red, green, and blue. Correct. Mini LED is another form of an LCD backlight. Okay, so there's a backlight behind this panel of LCD pixels that's shooting light through it. But instead of a conventional LED where you might have hundreds or maybe 1,000 LEDs behind here and you might have 100 or 200 zones of dimming, with mini LED you have tens of thousands of LEDs behind and thousands of dimming zones.
So this is false, but false to the 10th degree.
Yes, the next generation of false.
They say 4,000 nit brightness. They say deeper blacks, so it is a high contrast.
Right, because the LEDs behind, like normal LED backlights, can be dimmed and even turned off. So you get very deep blacks. the big advantage here is the number of zones.
Right.
So if you have a star in a black, in the black of space, if you have a normal LED, there might be a halo around it, right? Because the LEDs can't just one dim one at a time. Right. Here, you can, so you get much less haloing.
You can actually see that on some droplets of water.
Exactly.
Now, I have to say, side by side, we've got OLED 8K, we've got LCD nano cell 8K, and we've got this micro LED or mini LED 8K.
Yeah.
To me, there's no question that OLED is by far the best.
It is to me, too.
Okay.
It isn't as bright, though. Not nearly as bright. That OLED is probably, it's less than 1,000 nits.
You're right.
This is 4,000 nits.
Yeah. Yeah.
And some content is actually mastered in to 4,000 nit peak brightness. So a TV like this would have an advantage when watching that content.
If you're watching J.J. Abrams movies, you watch it on the
correct
mini LED. I have to say, the darkness of the OLED, maybe because I'm used to it, feels more natural to me.
I agree with you completely.
It feels like the real world.
Yep. Yep.
This feels way too bright. And it's great for the showroom floor.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I want to see Mike. They have micro LED.
They have micro LED.
All right, let's go look at that.
Cool.
This is interesting. In the micro LED, they've actually darkened this. They've got curtains.
Which
this
I
is a dark
I'm not quite sure why that is, because micro LED is the brightest of them all.
It looks fantastic.
Oh, it's amazing.
Now, one of the advantages of micro LED, because they're direct view, you can piece them together, right?
It's assembled in tiles. The tiles are maybe roughly a foot square, and you just put as many together as you want.
Wow. So you could make this 200 inches.
Absolutely.
And it wouldn't even matter if you could get it in the door, because you bring the tiles in.
Exactly.
How big are the tiles? Are they
roughly a foot?
A foot square?
Roughly.
Look at that.
Yeah, it's
now,
amazing.
How about the refresh rate on this? Is it fast?
Very fast.
So it's better than LCD in that regard. There's no shuttering. You're looking directly at these LEDs.
Correct. And the LEDs can be brightened and dimmed almost instantaneously.
So it's the fast response time of a CRT almost.
Correct. Almost, yeah.
Yeah. This is a movie. This is better than a movie theater.
Yeah, exactly. There's one of these in a commercial movie theater in Los Angeles by Samsung. We'll see the Samsung one later.
So this one we're looking at is 145 inches. But again, the size on micro LEDs is completely arbitrary. You make it bigger or smaller.
That's right. And the size determines the resolution as well. This is probably 4K.
Scott, you have an eye for... I have to say, though,
boy, does that look good, man.
I wouldn't see... I mean, as good as OLED, right?
Yeah, oh yeah. Oh yeah. As deep black as OLED.
Does it have any of the issues OLED has with, over time, the fading of dyes or anything? So this is a new technology that ultimately probably is going to replace OLED.
Yes,
pricey
exactly.
Right now.
Oh, super expensive. The Sony version of this is like $1 million.
Oh. Okay, we're leaving now.
I don't know how much this one is. Most companies are not announcing.
They're not selling these.
They're not selling. This not announcing prices.
As with a lot of what you see at CES.
Exactly.
This is a demo.
Exactly.
Someday,
yes.
Maybe.
Technology demo. A concept piece.
But it does make you drool. It makes you want it, doesn't
oh,
it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, over at Samsung, they've got one that's 230-some inches. 8K. So
well, let's
see
go look at that, too. All right. We're at the LG booth. Anything else to see? Oh, I want to see that gaming monitor.
Oh, you want to see the gaming monitor.
Let's
That's
go.
Pretty cool.
So if you're a gamer, I know with laptops you're starting to get OLED screens. How about on a desktop? How about a giant, what is this, 40?
This is 48 inches.
This is a TV, really.
It's a crossover piece between being a TV and a monitor.
But it's OLED?
It's OLED. It's like most of the OLEDs from LG, it's, yeah, let's go down here. It's variable frame rate. It's certified in NVIDIA G-Sync.
So the NVIDIA cards have their own proprietary technology, and you can, in the game, either set it for a frame rate, but you can maybe even in the game will change during in the middle of the game.
It will change in the middle of the game whether there's a lot of action or whether there's not, because if you don't do that, then you get what's called tearing sometimes and other artifacts that aren't really nice. Super fast response time, and the other really cool thing about this monitor is the pixel pitch, the density of the pixels is very high. It's 100 pixels per inch.
I can't see any pixels.
Can't see any pixels.
I mean, I'm right on next to it.
Yeah.
And honestly, gamers are going to be pretty close. I mean,
yes, the optimum viewing distance is 3 feet.
You're going to be right here.
Right here.
So you've got your PC, you're playing the game.
Exactly. It's dark when it needs to be, but the movement is crystal clear. There's no tearing, no breakups, no blocking, macro blocking. This is the same pixel pitch, 100, roughly 100 ppi, as the 8K 88-inch TV. So they've taken that and shrunk it, the pixels density down to a 48-inch size.
Holy cow, look at the specular highlight.
Yeah, look at that. Yeah, exactly right.
Look at the dot there. Oh, my God, that's incredible. How much? I want it now, Mike.
Oh, that's like a crosshair.
That's a crosshair.
No, but I am seeing. Look at these.
Yeah.
Oh no! It's monsters.
Trigger. Yeah.
Too late.
Is it for sale? This comes out in the first half of this year.
Do we have a price?
I work in NVIDIA. I can't really comment on that. But if I were to guess, Lil Laporte, nice to meet you. I'm sorry.
Nice to see you, Mike. If you were to guess, Mike, now that you know it's me.
Well, again, speaking from NVIDIA, I would say it'd be comparable to what you see on the current market.
That's not bad.
We're
talking around 1,000 maybe for something of this size, a little bit.
It's hard to say because this is their first time.
It's on a 43-inch for 1,000 right now.
48-inch.
No, I'm saying a 43-inch
gaming monitor would be in the 1,000 buck range.
I think HP has one right now.
Okay.
So, yeah, maybe twice that because it's amazing, right?
It's OLED and it's amazing, yeah.
And you watch TV on it.
That's right.
Put that in your dorm room and you're set. Go Ducks.
Well, Beavers.
Wrong one. Beavers. Got to get the right animal. So important. Hey,
anyway, this is an important piece.
I think that's amazing. That's the best monitor I've ever seen for gaming. I mean, it's an OLED. That's incredible.
Yeah. Part of their CX series, which includes sizes up to 75 or 77 inch at least.
So all of LG's 2020 models have G-Sync and variable refresh rate support. So game on any of them.
What do you do in NVIDIA?
So I do GeForce technical marketing. Nice. So I've had the been fortunate enough to work with Shroud when he was still at PC Perspective and working with different press and reviewers and then working on our products internally and coming to shows and talking to folks like you guys.
Nice. So. Well, Marcus Bradley just went that way. Go get him. there's the stars. All right, Scott, thank you for taking the time. Thank you, Mike. We appreciate it. That's LG. Where do we go next? Hey, look who I ran into from Le Plein Écran.
Yeah.
Did I get it right?
Yeah.
On French TV 24.
It's LCI. It's LCI. It's a channel. And TF1. TF1. Know, like the big...
It's great to see you.
Good to see you,
Leo. You having fun at CES?
Fun is a very generous way of putting things. I mean, when you go to CES, people are like, oh, you're going to Vegas. How lucky of you. Like, it's because you haven't been.
Yeah. But I think that one of the reasons we do this, and one of the reasons you do it is because you want to bring this interesting show to somebody else. Right?
And you're always fearful of just missing out on something like this.
This is wild.
This was a total surprise.
This is wild. So look at us. We're real people.
We're real.
See the bags under our eyes.
There is value in being real.
The exhaustion. These people look real. They're AI generated.
Yes.
This is not a real person at all.
And they are real time. This is not like video game.
I could converse with them.
Yeah. You could.
Not right now.
For now, I think the way they look is mostly what they worked on. And it's very...
realistic.
It's uncanny. It's terribly realistic.
But it's not Uncanny Valley, which is the kind of amazing thing. It's so well done that I didn't know that they were real people.
This is like news correspondent.
Yeah. So Neon, it's interesting. We were just talking to somebody from Neon, was funded by Samsung, but Samsung didn't know what they were up to until they showed the product.
So it means that for a company like Samsung to have like moonshot little projects that they fund, it's interesting because their head of research in California is actually a French guy that I know and love dearly, Luc Julia, who was the founder of Siri and things like that.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and he just put out a book that says artificial intelligence does not exist.
Yes.
I don't think he'll change his mind seeing this because... what they're really trying to do is do these like ultra realistic avatars.
This is more like deep fakes.
Yes.
So where AI gets involved is in creating the models using big training sets. But after that's done, this is all kind of just runs.
Sure.
Yeah. With that, in fact, she's not responding to us or anything. She's living her own.
But if you give her a script, she'll read it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Does that worry? Because you work.
I wouldn't say worry, but it's interesting to know that in the very near future, because these are things that we were talking about, like, you know, 2, 5, 10 years down the line, No, this is now.
We walked in and here it is. I saw this. I knew there was something going on, but I couldn't quite figure it out.
At the other end of the booth, you have this, like, Chinese-looking university professor. And you can totally imagine him being in, like, you know, a MOOC, a YouTube video, teaching you about econometrics. And you won't even think twice about, is he real, is he not? It doesn't really matter.
You've gone right through the uncanny valley to reality. I mean, that she looks real.
The plan here is to use them for, like, customer service. And you have to think of really interesting models. If you're in advertising, how wonderful is it to have a virtual spokesperson that they can do whatever in however many languages you want, and you don't have to pay them residuals ever.
There are a lot of real life spokespersons on this floor.
Yes.
Cedric Ingren from TFI, TF1, LCI, Boulogne, France, Lenegren, everybody watch.
All right.
See you soon. All right. Hey, nice to see you.
Good to see you.
So one thing that's happened in the TV world, it started, you know, of course, American TVs, then Japan with Pioneer and Sony, Toshiba.
Yep,
and
Sharp.
And then South Korea took over.
Right, with LG and Samsung.
And I think what happened is that the Chinese TV manufacturers said, now is our turn.
Yep.
And slowly, since I've been here over the last 8 years, you've seen bigger and bigger booths, more and more presence from China.
Right.
This is Hisense's booth.
Right.
They're one of the three big Chinese companies. Hisense and TCL, we know.
We
know. You mentioned Konka.
Konka used to be what's called an OEM, original equipment manufacturer.
They make the TV, somebody else
would put a brand on them. Yeah. Now they're coming into the U.S. market all on their own, and they've got some very impressive stuff. We're going to go over there in a minute.
So I'm pretty familiar with the Hisense. We have had that laser TV, the short throw projection.
Ultra
TV.
Short throw projection.
So my projector at home is about 8 inches from the screen, special
the
screen.
Box that sits there on the floor.
And
on
we
a
love
stand.
It. It's 100 inches.
Yeah.
Ours has two lasers. They're now showing the three laser tri.
Three laser, right, which is red, green, and blue separate lasers, which gives you basically all the colors the eye can see.
Oh, crap.
Which is amazing. Now you got to buy a new TV.
But then there's this.
Yes.
This is a TV with a speaker behind the TV.
A laser TV. So the same idea with an ultra-short throw projector. But the screen is special. The screen, it has speaker drivers, essentially, mounted behind the screen. So the screen becomes the speaker.
So you mean the screen's vibrating
in
the way that a diaphragm and a speaker would vibrate?
Yeah,
don't
exactly.
You notice that?
No. You don't.
If the Terminator gets to, like, blow some up, the screen doesn't go like this?
No, it doesn't.
Is it Dolby? Is it a 5.1? Is it Atmos?
There are three channels in the front
of
the screen.
So there's the center channel with left-right.
Correct.
You might have surrounds that you would add
in. And, in fact, in this demo, they have the same material as the screen, although not reflective, providing the surrounds and the overheads for Atmos.
Wow.
So it's basically the screen consists of a bunch of these little vibrators that are activated by six exciters, they're called, behind the screen, two on the right, two in the middle, two on the left.
Besides hiding the speakers, why would I want to do this?
Well, it's because the sound is coming directly from the screen.
So when somebody's speaking,
the sound is coming from them. As opposed to in most projection systems, you'd have the center speaker where most of the dialogue is below. Right, it's below.
Yeah.
So it's okay. That works pretty well. But it's better if the sound can come directly from the screen.
And you've heard this. Is the sound good?
I have. It sounds really good.
Interesting.
Really good. They've got this working down to like 40 hertz. You almost don't need a subwoofer.
Wow.
I mean, it would be happy.
You'd want to add a sub.
You'd
want to
add a
surrounds.
Right.
But the center and left right coming right from where
coming
they should
right
be,
from where they should be coming. Exactly right. It's very cool.
Well, all right, so now, I have to say, I walked by this with Lisa yesterday.
Yeah.
And, you know, we love our Hisense laser.
Yeah.
But I said, and it's not going to happen right away, Lisa, but maybe in the next 4 or 5 years, we're going to go 8K. And look at this.
Yeah.
Everybody's doing 8K. It's just another 8K screen. But
Everybody, I have to say,
these really come to life. I think
it really
gorgeous.
Does. It, even though you can't see the individual pixels or as much detail as you could represent here, it just looks more lifelike.
Yeah.
It really does.
There's something going on. And, of course, they always pick source content that has lots of detail.
Of course.
The cities,
yeah,
shots.
Exactly right.
I've been to Positano. I recognize actually a lot of these places. And it feels like you're there. In fact, for traveling, What a great way to travel. Now, what's unique about this TV?
This TV has what's called dual modulation. So in an LCD TV, you've got a backlight, and the light passes through little LCD shutters, okay, to make them brighter or dimmer. What this does is it puts an extra layer of LCD shutters in there so that when they both close down, it gets much darker,
and
much
that's what
blacker.
You're continually going for is this high dynamic range.
In
dark,
LCD
dark,
TVs,
dark,
that's
dark.
Really hard to do. Yeah. Really hard to do.
So
OLEDs,
effect,
it's simple.
A double shutter to make
Correct.
It double dark.
Correct. The extra shutter panel behind the actual LCD panel is 1080p, sometimes called 2K, but it gives you 2 million dimming zones.
Wow. That's a lot.
So that's a lot. It's more even than mini LED.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So this is another approach to making LCD TVs darker and darker still. It's an 8K TV, so it's got 33 million pixels. It's got 2 million pixels in the dimming layer, if you will, which gets it deeper black, reduces that haloing I was talking about earlier. This is Hisense's approach to the problem of how do you get deep blacks in LCDs.
So one thing that's happened that's kind of interesting is, and I think this happened with the Korean manufacturers as well, is at first, you know, LG was lucky gold star in the back of the drugstore. Right. They weren't known for quality, they were known for price.
Right.
But as they started to build brand, they started to get more and more innovative, and in fact out-innovated the Japanese manufacturers.
Generally speaking.
Same thing with the Chinese companies. Yep. They started the low end, the inexpensive. It sounds like Hisense is starting to really innovate technologically.
Correct. However, their mainstream products, they have...
are still less expensive.
Much less expensive. They've got a Roku line, they've got an Android line, and they've got their own operating system called Vita. And in each case, they've gone with a good, better, best philosophy in those particular lines. And they're almost all 4K at this point. And they're all very inexpensive. So they are innovating. This XD or dual layer technology, 8K, is all very advanced. But it's not going to be for another year or two before you can actually buy one. And it'll probably be on the relatively expensive side.
So they're going to get to the more premium product.
Exactly. Just like Korea did.
Just what happened.
Yeah, exactly.
One other thing that I think we should be talking about when we're talking about 8K is upscaling. Because there isn't any 8K content.
Correct. Virtually none.
And all these companies are emphasizing, I know Hisense is saying we've got AI upscaling. They're emphasizing their ability to take 2K and 4K content and make it look good on 8K. What do you think?
Oh, it's a critical factor. And all of the companies, LG, Samsung, Sony, Hisense, TCL, Konica, all are doing this AI upscale.
Okay.
They're all doing it. And basically, it gives you a much better picture at a lower resolution when you upscale it to 8K so that, you know, it looks fantastic.
I wish we could see some 2K or 4K content.
No, these demos are all going to be—they're all going to be custom 8K content.
But when you do go into the store, if you're looking at a 4K TV, you really want to look at how it handles HD and even SD.
And even SD.
If I Love Lucy looks terrible, you're not going to watch I Love Lucy.
Exactly.
And everybody should be watching I Love Lucy.
That's right. I couldn't agree more.
I think the same thing's going to happen with 8K.
Yes.
You may buy an 8K TV, but at least initially, the vast majority of content won't be 8K. So
That's
the upscaler
right.
is the thing it's you really
super
want to pay
important.
Attention to.
That's correct. You really want to pay attention to.
All right. Where we go next?
Oh, we have to go see Konica.
One of these things is not like the other. Konica, we're on it. I'm going to bet, Scott Wilkinson, the first time our viewers at home have heard the word Konica in any context at all is right now.
It's right here.
But this is a name, a TV company you're going to be hearing a lot more from soon.
That's right. They've been here for years at CES, but they've never established a presence in the U.S. market. They've made TVs for other companies. They've made TVs for the Chinese market. Now, this year, they've decided we want to come into the U.S. market big time.
And boy, are they coming in big time. These are both micro LED screens. You know, I don't know. You remember the Ray Bradbury story, The Veldt?
Yes.
It's a house, but one of the rooms in the house is a veldt, is an African veldt, because it has a whole wall that's a screen. In fact, it might even be the whole room.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like a holodeck.
Yes. Yes.
I can see this happening in the next 5 to 10 years these screens can be any arbitrary size. You start with 1 foot square tiles and just build them out to the size you want.
Yep.
This is the wall of a room. You could have all four walls if you could afford it.
That's right.
And in a completely immersive experience.
That's right.
This is 4K, that's 8K, same tiles.
Same tiles, just how many did you put together? Exactly.
And the image quality is, I think it's superb, right?
Yeah.
So it's direct view micro LED.
Right. These are LEDs, tiny little microscopic LEDs, red, green, and blue, that are just emitting light directly, and that's what you're seeing.
That's why they're so bright. There's 2,000 nits.
2,000 nits coming off the screen, and that's probably, even if you put a full screen white up, in most cases, like an OLED, they may say, oh, we do 700 nits, but if you put a full screen white up, it's probably more like 300.
You can't do it.
You can't do it. These can. So 2,000 nits, 10 million to 1 contrast ratio. Now, that's a manufacturer spec. I take that with a big grain of salt.
Yeah, yeah.
But still, they can go down to deepest black off.
This is HDR times 10. This is
HDR.
HDR.
High dynamic range.
Yeah, yeah. Full range, though.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
black,
yeah. Oh,
black.
Yeah.
And so, and because it's so bright, I mean, we're not in a darkened room. Some of these other micro-LEDs are being shown in special viewing areas.
Right.
We're out on the show floor,
that's
and
right.
It pops.
It pops totally.
Again, price unknown.
This is a technology demo. They're
way over our heads. It's too expensive.
Yeah.
Millions in some cases.
Probably. I mean, this 8K wall, probably in that range. Yeah.
But as with everything, the manufacturer gets easier, the prices go down. And I have a feeling this is going to happen pretty fast because this solves a lot of problems. People want big screens.
Yes.
But they can't get them in the door. You know, I remember that Sharp, we were talking about the old Sharp 105-inch that I showed on Live with Regis and Kelly.
Right.
It had to be moved in the hold of a 747, and you had to take the roof off of the house to bring it in unless you happen to have a loading dock in your house.
Right, right. Or you build the house around the
or
TV.
Or you build the house around the TV. This can be brought in little one-foot squares, and you assemble it on the wall.
That's right.
I have a feeling this is the future of television.
It is absolutely the future of television. I think 5 to 10 years, it'll, as with everything digital, right, the price starts high and comes down. And that's going to happen here. The problem is manufacturing.
That's
it's
my question.
Still
what
difficult.
Is the challenge of it?
It's difficult to place these microscopic LEDs perfectly, and they have to be perfectly placed. And these little tiles have to be aligned perfectly so that you don't see any seams.
So you can't assemble it yourself. It's
You need to have a technician
Legos.
Come out and do it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not like, well, eventually, maybe someday.
Legos someday.
But for now, it's not a simple thing to make the tiles, to place the LEDs perfectly, and it's not a simple thing to put them together and align them.
But we are seeing the future.
Absolutely, no
television,
question about it.
And I have a feeling we're going to hear more from Comcast.
Yes, and no question about it.
Really,
they've also got mini LED that looks mighty good. Let's look at
mini LED. So, just to recap, we just looked at micro LED. What's mini LED?
Mini LED is a backlight system for a traditional LCD TV. But
so it's just another kind of LCD.
It's another kind of LCD. It's really the backlight. The light shines through the LCD panel. And instead of maybe 1,000 LEDs and 100 dimming zones,
We always talk about how good fault is. Full array,
local dimming. Far better than edge lit.
Right.
And most of the new TVs are going fault.
Okay.
Yeah, edge lighting is kind of disappearing, which I'm really glad.
Oh, good, yeah.
So this takes...
This is fault times 10.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. We have 40,000 LEDs behind here.
Wow.
Thus, they're called mini LEDs because they're smaller than regular LEDs. But
are
not
they
as
white,
small as
are
micro.
Are they all white light?
Yes, they are all
so
white
they're the
light.
Backlight.
Right.
As with LCD technology, you have shutters and
shutters and
colors.
Color filters.
The filters, okay.
Right. So we still have LCD shutters. We still have color filters, red, green, and blue. But instead of 1,000 LEDs and 100 dimming zones, we have 40,000 LEDs and 10,000 dimming
zones. And what's the benefit? Why do we do that?
Because with a few dimming zones, if you have a bright thing on a dark background that's smaller than a dimming zone, that dimming zone still has to brighten up in order for that bright little object to be bright. But then the background, the dark background, gets brighter as well, cause what's called a halo.
Right.
And so with 10,000 dimming zones, you could have individual little stars on a space background, and you wouldn't see halos around.
Perfect.
So it's perfect.
Really,
really nice. You get even better blacks, brighter colors. I don't know if this one uses quantum dots. We're going to see some quantum dots a little later, and those have to do with the color, how wide the color gamut is, how many color.
I have to say, you know, I mean, just from a pure aesthetic point of view, this looks great.
It looks great.
It fantastic. Looks, you know, as good as the micro LED. I know it isn't the same technology at all, but it looks pretty good. This is 8K.
This is 8K mini LED. I think it's a 65 inch.
This is Konica again. Now, there's some CES lore here because. Yeah. This corner used to be the Intel corner.
Intel corner.
And across used to be the Microsoft booth.
Right.
I remember when TCL took over the Microsoft booth, yep. And we went, this was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Microsoft stopped coming. Yeah. TCL, we said, what's TCL?
What's TCL?
So now, this is the Intel booth. Konica's here, and I think...
TCL is back in the main hall.
TCL's back there. Konica's got both Microsoft and Intel now.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's tea leaves, but I think you can read into this what's happening as a trend in the industry.
Yeah.
These companies are moving in.
Seriously. Now, in addition to the micro LED and the mini LED, Konica is also bringing in more traditional OLED TVs and more traditional LCD TVs.
This is good news because LG kind of owned OLED for a long time. Now, Sony's done a lot of OLED for a long time.
But they source their panels from LG. Everybody does.
LG made them all. Does Konica make their own?
No, I don't think so. I don't know that for a fact.
We'll find out. But LG sounds like LG still kind of owns this.
I suspect. LG Display is separate from LG Electronics. LG Electronics makes the TVs that you buy.
But the displays come from
LG. The raw panel comes from LG Display, and I suspect that Konica, I know that TCL, I know that Sony, all those TVs, all those OLEDs come from LG Display.
That's one thing that I imagine these companies are excited about micro LED is that no one owns micro LED.
Correct.
They can all make micro LED.
Correct. If they can get the technology down to place those LEDs perfectly.
If they can improve the process.
Exactly.
All right. We're done with Konica?
Yep. We're done with Konica. I think we need to go to TCL next. Speaking of TCL.
They're just across the way. Here we go. So I bought my mom a TCL because it was cheap.
Right.
It had Roku built in.
Yep.
I know it wasn't the greatest quality. She's 86. Oh. I don't think she was worried about it. But TCL's also come a long way.
And I would say, for the money, it's really good quality.
It's as good as Vizio and that
certainly
second
tier. In that range. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
So we're in front of a couple of... talk about acronym mishmash.
Yeah, yeah.
Acronym mashups. We've got a QLED...
Mini LED.
QLED Mini LED.
8K. So this is Mini LED, like we've seen before, with... 25,000 LEDs behind the screen.
And just to reiterate, in case everybody didn't watch the whole thing, that's a LCD-style technology with local dimming that is 40,000 points behind.
Actually, 25,000 in this case. But yes, tens of thousands behind. Right. Full array local dimming. So each, and there are many more dimming zones than in a traditional TV, so you get better resolution of brightness and darkness on the screen.
The thing that might be interesting to people... this is available now, right?
It will be. The 6 series, pardon me, the 6 series had mini LED, and it's available now.
Yeah.
This is the 8 series, which will be available, I think, second half.
Okay.
And again, at a very, very reasonable price. In this case, we have quantum dots. Because notice the acronym QLED.
I thought that was a Samsung.
It was, but for some reason, Samsung decided not to make it exclusive.
So it's the same technology?
Yeah, okay. Exactly right. And the other distinguishing factor here is that the mini LEDs are deposited directly into the glass of this panel. So there's less distance between them and the actual LCD shutters and imaging panel.
That means less bleed, less halo
correct.
Effect, more precise.
Correct, exactly right.
And also, probably this is going to be fairly inexpensive.
Probably so. Now, the 8 series is their top of the line.
Yeah.
So it'll be the most expensive from TCL, but it's still going to be a heck of a lot less than it is from, say, Samsung or whatever.
I've seen they've won a lot of
they've
awards.
They've won a bunch of awards. So. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So that it uses quantum dots, which gives you a wider range of colors, and you can see that in this demo material.
That's why
here.
They're showing all
of course.
Colors.
They're actually showing pictures of quantum dot material using quantum dots to display it.
That's Ouroboros. Now let's turn around because we've got a cinema wall here, 132 inch. Now this is micro
LED,
not mini LED, and that's going to really confuse people for a long time.
Right.
But this is those snap together panels.
Right, which with LEDs that are super tiny that are emitting light, and that's what we're seeing directly.
I feel
red,
like
green,
I
and
can
blue.
See pixels on this one.
Well, this is only 4K.
Oh, who wants 4K anymore?
And at 4K. at this distance, you can't see the pixels.
If you were sitting in your couch,
you wouldn't see them. Yeah, I mean, if we stood back in the a little farther back.
We're right next to it, though, and I can't see the pixels.
Exactly.
But that's 4K. And 8K, literally, on any of the 8K sets we've seen, even the giant 8K sets, we were just next to at Konka, you couldn't see any pixels.
At this distance, you put your nose up against
it,
you couldn't see it.
I've been trying to do that.
Yeah.
They keep saying, get your nose off our screen, LaPorte.
Exactly. All so right. this is there. And you, in the black, you can see the seams between the panels, just barely.
Yeah.
But with real content, you can't really see it.
That's kind of interesting, too.
Yeah.
Is that something they'll fix over time, or is that just in the nature of micro-LED?
It's the nature of micro-LED.
Because there are panels.
They are separate panels. Like, and so part of the cost, as I mentioned before, is having an engineer, technician, come out
just
and align them perfectly. Yeah. You want to minimize the visibility of those.
Yeah, even with some of the light content, I can still see scenes.
Again,
I
up this close.
Yeah, you can see where the panels are. I bet you, Ann, if you get close in on this, you can see... You know, definitely see some lines, especially where it's bright. Look where it's white.
Right around here.
Solid color. You can see. So that's something to be aware of. May get better.
Oh, it will get better, undoubtedly. Again, we're in the very early stages. This is, as you said before, this is the future of TV.
I feel like it is.
It really
is. It's going to replace OLED. It's going to replace LCD.
No question.
It's direct view.
Yep.
It's bright. This particular one is 1,500 nits. Feels pretty bright, though.
Oh, very.
2.5 million to 1 contrast ratio. So.
Yep.
Again, those are made up numbers.
Yeah.
But I think it looks pretty good. I think it looks really
good. Oh, yeah. And if we stood back a little farther, it would look even better.
Certainly catches the eyes.
So TCL is also using the term QLED because they're really big into quantum dots.
Okay.
That's another thing that's going to be more and more common in
only
TVs.
On LCD style TVs.
Correct.
Though, like
now, yes.
Yeah.
Eventually, you could make an OLED with quantum dot filters.
Right.
Which would make them actually brighter than they are now.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so there is a future for quantum dots beyond where they're currently being used in LCD TVs.
Right.
But right now, and for the next couple of years at least, they're going to be just in LCD TVs as they are now.
So for many years, I've come to CES, and there's been a battle about who has the biggest screen.
Yes.
And I remember... There was a 95-inch screen, and then 2 days later, somebody said, oh, well, we have a 100-inch, 105.
Panasonic 102.
You remember
Sharp,
that? It was like 1-inch.
Sharp
105. A little bit. So this is the biggest screen at CES.
As far as I know.
How big is this?
292 inches diagonal.
This is huge! This is Samsung's micro-LED.
Micro-LED called the wall.
The wall. What's amazing is it's one signal. It's not a bunch of screens. We've seen that before put together.
Right.
It's one signal to one big screen.
8K in this case.
So that also shows you how much resolution 8K has. Because normally when you blow something up, the dots become bigger and bigger.
It gets softer.
This is spectacular. This feels like you're here. When that elephant was coming at us, I wanted to run.
And there's no bezel around the screen. It's frameless. It's just there. As you say, you could build your wall out of this.
This is stunning.
Yeah.
I think Sharp and everybody else has just said, okay, you win.
Oh, wait, you win.
You win, Samsung. You got it. Look at that. Look at that. We are, I mean, I feel like this could be a Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Wow. This and that was cool right there. They have a mode where you have a TV screen on a wall
around,
and
it's all a screen.
It's all the screen. It's all an image.
This is the future of home theater. This is
no doubt about it.
It's more than home theater. It's totally immersive. So what else? Let's go see some other Samsung stuff. So it's funny because at this point, micro LED, mini LED, 8K, HDMI 2.1, quantum dots, everybody's got the same kind of stuff.
That's true.
We haven't talked about 5G. Is 5G involved in this? We're at the
Samsung absolutely. Booth. You're in the Samsung booth, and 5G is involved. It may very well become another way of delivering content to your TV.
Instead of terrestrial broadcast, streaming through terrestrial cable.
Right, or even streaming over your network, your local area network.
You just wireless.
Get it wireless from 5G in your city.
And that's what they're talking about over here, the new era,
to some
next
degree,
era of
video
streaming.
And they're also talking about improved... codecs, compression,
H.265,
AV1,
What's AV1?
AV1 is a codec for streaming 8K from YouTube.
Jeez. Oh, so it's a Google. That's a Google codec.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And they're showing over there, I thought this was kind of interesting, a universal program guide that will tell you where you can find stuff on any OTT or OTA platform.
That's the biggest complaint we all have.
That's right.
You don't know where your show is.
Exactly.
And nobody cares. They know about their show. They don't care what network made it or where
it is.
Right,
right. Where do I go to get it?
Put it on the screen.
Put it on the screen for me. And then Samsung's working on that,
they
too.
They can solve that. That would be huge.
That would be huge. Exactly right.
All right. So we got
And we got ATSC 3.0 tuners in some of these TVs as well.
Okay.
Samsung is more of an incremental improvement story, I think, which is good. You know, their AI processor is really good. Again, we were
quantum AI.
Quantum AI. Talking about upscaling.
Right.
Talking about taking lower content, lower resolution content up to 8K. It does a really good job of that.
The days of one company having a massive advantage over the other is really
kind of over.
Yeah. I mean, the technologies are not proprietary. They're widely known. And
everybody's,
they're great. I mean, every time I see an 8K screen, I'm saying, I gotta have
especially
micro LED. I think that's gonna transfer.
That is where it's all going. But again, it's gonna be very expensive for a while.
Yeah.
And if you want something 8K, looks really good, not that expensive, there are plenty of other options.
We've been trying to simulate for your benefit the death march that is CES. One more stop. We're at the Sony booth, finally. It's funny, Sony puts their booth way in the back. It's the longest walk, but it's kind of a destination, right?
It is. It really is. They've been in the same location for many, many years.
Everybody knows. Come to the back of the Central Hall and
that's right.
See what's new
from
Sony.
And it's huge. It's a huge booth.
So what is new from Sony? Anything?
Well, yeah. They've got a couple of 2020 models of TVs.
Still doing Bravias? What is their...
Well, that's their branding name, okay. Yeah. They've got an LCD, they've got an OLED, the next generation with the next generation processor.
Now, I remember on the last shootout, the Sony OLEDs won, right?
That's right.
So they do make a very good OLED.
Oh, no doubt.
No doubt about it.
No doubt about it.
Do they also have micro LED, mini LED,
They QLED? Don't have mini LED.
They don't.
And they don't have QLED.
Oh.
They're more traditionalists.
Yeah.
I don't think they even have any 8K. I think it's all 4K.
Interesting. But they do have sound.
They do. Now, Sony, of course, is everything from a production studio, from movie studio, all the way to the end result.
Right.
So one of the things that they concentrate on is sound. And one of the interesting things here at the show is something called 360 reality audio, which is basically, I tried it out last night. You take your cell phone, you take a picture of your ears.
What?
It modifies the audio to match the profile of your ear.
Wow.
And gives you a sense of the sound coming from outside your head.
That's very interesting. Actually,
cool.
We've seen, this is not the first device I've heard
Correct.
Of that does that.
Correct.
But still,
but
interesting.
But it's cool.
Yeah,
it's
and it sounds
cool.
good?
Yeah, it really does.
So the sound comes from out there.
It comes from outside. Yeah, JVC is actually showing something like that over in North Hall as well. So there's a couple
and these
of...
And this is for headphones.
For headphones. Right. Correct, exactly.
So we can't really show you what those would sound like.
No. But then we also have... They're showing a 15-inch, what they're calling a light field display. Now, light field displays are a type of 3D display without glasses.
It's the next generation of glasses-free 3D.
Correct.
3D. And you know how skeptical I am.
I know.
I've seen this again and again and again and never did anything for me.
Right.
But I'm willing to be open-minded.
This might be something that
The technology is really interesting.
It is. Light field technology is very interesting. It takes a bunch of little tiny projectors and shoots the light out in all kinds of different directions.
So it's direct view. You're not looking at a projection.
Correct.
It's shining a light
Correct.
In your eyes. I have to say, when I compare this, and I understand the whole idea is to make you feel like you're looking at something that really exists in space.
Right.
It looks like other 3D video, where it looks like a 2D screen with 3D volumetric information. Honestly, HDR, 4K, or 8K, to me, feels more realistic. I know. My head, my brain knows I'm looking at a screen.
Right.
It knows it's not looking at something in space.
Right.
So, even with kind of a willful suspension of disbelief,
yeah,
I don't feel like this is in any way better than just a great screen with great color and great vividness.
I agree. I don't think it's
you know, baked.
It's interesting. I think it's interesting. Technology that's very interesting.
Exactly.
It's actually seeing my eyes, and so it's projecting into my eyes in three dimensions. But I,
right.
If you get a chance to see it, I'd love to know what you think of it. My point of view, a great TV is going to do a lot better job. And you don't have to make special content that comes at you. It's just, there's no point,
right?
So actually, part of what's fun about the Sony booth is the booth itself. It's a beautiful presentation. Sony did make one of the few surprise announcements of CES by announcing an electric vehicle, self-driving car, which I don't think Sony ever intends to make. That's not their business. But it's to demonstrate Sony technologies with sensors and cameras and technology.
And the dashboard is all OLED or, you know.
Yeah, it's a technology demo, not a product. But you can see it's getting a lot of attention.
Yeah.
And it was one of the few things that happened at CES that we didn't know about ahead of time.
Right. Also the neon, those artificial humans.
Artificial humans.
We didn't know about that until we got here either.
Actually, I've been artificial for 10 years now. Scott Wilkinson is our home theater guru. He is at techhive.com, and you can see he is the guy to go to when you want to know what's the latest in television. I can't thank you enough.
My pleasure.
For your NTSC video.
Oh, yes.
Your SMPTE color card and the time you spent, because really it makes so much more sense when you put it all in context. Thank you, Scott.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I hope you've enjoyed our TV tour of CES. Lots more still to come from Las Vegas CES 2020. So, Mark, we're here at the LG booth with... You're growing herbs.
Yes, we are.
Is this a refrigerator or a garden?
It's actually a combination of both. So we took our refrigeration technology and actually enhanced the overall experience for consumer to bring indoor gardening inside their home.
Why would you put it in our refrigerator?
Well, because now we can control the environment.
I see.
The vegetation,
humidity,
and herbs,
temperature.
Temperature,
you're not making
lighting.
It cold necessarily, but you're just making it consistent.
Correct.
And there's lighting, there's grow lighting.
Exactly. Each individual shelf will dictate and operate its own temperature settings, light source, and irrigation system.
Oh, that's great.
So everything is individualized and controllable through the ThinQ app. So once you basically set all this up, you will have to program via the application what is growing on each and every shelf. Okay, because again, the technology now, or the automation, takes over.
So this is a concept?
Correct.
Will LG make this?
Oh, absolutely.
And when?
We're looking, hopefully, to bring this to the U.S. market in 2021.
I'll get one. It's a built-in, though, so it's going to be one of those expensive built-in
Very
systems.
High luxury appliances.
A luxury herb garden in your home. Thank you, Mark. I appreciate it.
Pleasure, Leo. Thank you.
So Delta is, of course, known as an airline, but they also are a pretty big industrial company, and they're showing exoskeletons here. This is kind of amazing.
Pull the trigger and just really slow.
With these various exoskeletons, a single human can lift hundreds of pounds with only 1 pound of force. This is something a baggage handler might use at an airport. There's also a much more elaborate exoskeleton that you can use to do industrial repairs, lift things like engines, tires, really empower a single individual to do tough, heavy lifting, but the robot, the exoskeleton, is doing all the work. This is from Delta.
It's our 70 pounds. I'm not worried about it. Yeah, it's something heavy. Yeah, let's do two suitcases. That's not a little bit. And, I mean, it's true people can do this, but if you do this kind of lifting for very much time at all, you're going to injure your shoulder, your back, and really what I'm doing is I'm doing that lift that most people can't do. But I'm not straining my back, I'm not straining, you know, my arms, my shoulders, so I'm very comfortable, and the robot's taking all its own weight plus the weight of whatever I'm lifting. So, you know, that's increased quality of life for people that have injuries, and, you know, that's reduced costs for hospital bills because you don't have injuries, right? So that's a big step for workers.
As you can continue doing those tasks all day with the batteries on the Guardian XO, you get up to 8 hours of operating life. So it uses about 500 watts on average when he's moving around and doing different tasks. So with those batteries that are set up to about 8 hours of operating life, they're also considered two batteries. You can hot swap one, so in theory you don't need to take, so you'll never need to stop.
Yeah, the price keeps going on like that.
Absolutely. I'm almost with the tire, otherwise you're going to get a lot of people in
here. That's true. We'll have to get three people on this tire instead of just me. So I'll go ahead and set this back down. And once again, it's just going to take a hot second to do that.
Another doctor, Sergey Panarin. Hello, Sergey.
Hello.
From Walnut, California, but originally from Russia.
Yep.
And this is, I think it's kind of cool. I always wanted an Apple One computer, right? But there were thousands of dollars. Now you can get one for $99.
Yeah.
It's the same. It's like a complete, it's a ROM and everything, 6502, everything.
Yeah, it's not like boxes inside it. Just everything is explained here, like on YouTube, secure, like 6502. Real RAM, ROM, and ROM with the WOSX original card.
How cool.
Yeah, and WOS said, yeah, guys.
WOS said it's okay.
Yeah, yeah. He said it's okay. I asked him whether we could use it. And he said, yeah, guys.
I bet he loves this idea. And so what age groups do you think this would be aimed at?
Frankly, it's 12 plus, but also we have a lot of...
A lot of dads who want to do it, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of guys from Silicon Valley who like...
Sure.
Yeah, who are sure for companies.
Does it come with Apple Basic, or do I have to... That's in the ROM.
That's in the ROM, yeah.
Wow, that's so cool. How much?
How much dollars? Again, I mean, like $99.
$99. Can I get it now?
No, it's on pre-sale now. We have like pre-orders on our website.
So you're gonna, just like Steve Jobs did, you're gonna get the orders, buy the parts.
Stuff like this,
you're gonna go in the garage. You're gonna put it all together. Yeah. Where did you get the designs for all these ships?
Everything is absolutely original here, like a bidding part. Here's like we have two Arduinos for video output.
Arduino.
Yeah, also because we wanted.
So it's an emulator for those.
Only for video and keyboard.
Yeah.
But there is no any emulator for the computing part, the main part.
So this is this an actual MOSFET 6502?
Yeah,
it is.
6502, yeah.
Could you still get them?
Yeah. Also, there is a guy in Arizona, Bill Mansch, who was one of the creators of 6502, and they produce them now.
Nice. So there are new 6502.
Yeah.
And the RAM chip. Of course, you can get plenty of those.
It's new ones, it's new ones because we didn't really want it to make it like one-to-one copy,
right.
Because we wanted to re-engineer it to make it kind of the best of two worlds, like the classic and the new technologies like Arduino.
Did WOS look at it and say, oh, you could cut that chip out?
No, we didn't look at it yet, the details, but yeah, but the whole idea is to reduce the number of chips because,
he's famous for that.
Yeah.
So that's great. So you're emulating video and keyboard.
Yeah.
Is there a disk drive? A disk driver in there? Is the WOS chip in there? Can you emulate that as well?
No, there is no any storage right now. But we'll think about it. Maybe we'll add this.
And I could hook up a keyboard and monitor.
Yeah. Hook up a keyboard here and output.
You have lowercase or is it all uppercase?
Uppercase, yeah.
Green screen. Of course. It's got to be.
I'm going to show what is inside the box.
Yeah, will you?
So here.
Oh, that's beautiful. Nicely done.
Everybody on this conference likes this.
It's so pretty.
Yeah, so
really nice.
Explain what it is like what it is, all these gates, what it is, 3D decoder, what's the, and how it's used in the whole systems. Also, it's like, here's like bags with components and breadboards.
That's the breadboard. That's so great.
Yeah.
Oh, I think this is a great project for somebody. You learn a lot about how computers work.
Yeah.
I love it. Thank you, Sergey. Nice to meet you. SmartyKit.io. We've gone down into the deep down into the basement of the Sands Expo Center where the international booths are, and it's kind of fun because it feels almost like a science fair down here with all kinds of crazy gizmos and gadgets. This one really caught my eye because their tagline is Fresco, the Keurig of olive oil. I'm talking to Dr. Francesco Spadafora. Are you a doctor? Are you a professor?
I'm a doctor. I'm an engineer. With my colleague, this machine.
At the university?
Also the university in Calabria.
Yeah.
South of Italy.
Great olive oil in Calabria.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we want to export our fantastic products maybe there.
Right now you're selling this in Italy.
Yes, right now just in Italy. But obviously we want to expand our market.
This is great.
For sure.
So it takes fresh olives?
Exactly. The starting point is the creation of the pulp. In particular, we use a technique of flash freezing of the olive oil, Italian extra virgin olive oil.
Yeah.
With our technology, we created this pot of frozen oil.
Yeah.
We storage it inside of a bag.
Yep.
To avoid also the oxidation.
So this is better than if I buy it in a can or a bottle.
Yeah.
Because it's been frozen.
Maybe yes. Could be. For sure, it's fresh always.
Yeah.
It's fresh always.
It's tasty.
Yeah. Consider that.
That's great.
In after a few months, the most of the quality of the taste of the oil should be brought down. Yeah.
So you want it as fresh as possible.
Yeah, for us, yes.
So you put the pot in this device, it squeezes it, and it gives you the olive oil as needed.
Yeah, because the machine heats up the oil. That's yes, you have to maintain the oil, it's still frozen, sure.
Yep.
You put inside of the machine, and after a few minutes, the olive oil squeeze inside of the glass, so you can enjoy Italian extra virgin olive oil.
It's really good. Francesco, thank you so much.
Bye.
Francesco, the Keurig of olive oil. Finally, I've been waiting for this.
thank you.